Now, one thing that ought to be noted at this point about the Bulgarian thesis, because we're not going to be going over Aja's statements point by point, suffice it to say that there has never at any point been the slightest shred of independent evidence to back up what Mehmet Ali Aja said about the Bulgarian thesis. It's probably too bad that we don't have a sixth part to the broadcast, although maybe just as well from an endurance standpoint. But we could take yet another archive show and just tear apart from a logical standpoint the so-called Bulgarian thesis itself. There's an issue of a publication called Covert Action Information Bulletin, which we're going to be talking about tonight, and that had quite a bit of information ripping apart the Bulgarian thesis. We're not going to be dealing with that so much this evening. Suffice it to say, again, there's never been the slightest shred of independent evidence to corroborate it. Beyond that, the very statements that Ajaz has been making are absurd from the standpoint of the intelligence community, because he has been claiming to have been hired as an assassin in an international conspiracy, and he claims he knows the service that hired him. He has talked repeatedly about the KGB being the service that hired him. Simply as a matter of course, no assassin for a conspiracy of that magnitude would ever know who hired him. It would have been handled through a bunch of different channels, and the person pulling the trigger would never at any point have had any idea who hired him. Had he found out for any reason or another, that would have constituted an instant death sentence for him. So simply the fact that he claims to have know who hired him is absurd right on its face.
And not only to know who hired him, but to know who hired him through several levels, through the Bulgarian Secret Service up into the KGB, and to have been taken into the homes of, as he called them, high-ranking Bulgarian intelligence officials to discuss this assignment to shoot Pope John Paul II. There are a variety of holes in Aja's story. We're going to talk about some of the most important ones, because the closest thing to any kind of corroborative evidence that Mehmet Ali Aja was able to provide for his story, which otherwise was only corroborated by the word of CIA-linked journalists in the United States, were certain facts having to do with the homes of these Bulgarians that he had supposedly gone into to receive his assignment to shoot Pope John Paul II. That was the closest thing to corroborative evidence that he came up with, and we will talk later in the broadcast tonight about the likelihood of where that information came from. And it is pretty darn likely at this point that we know where it came from, and it was not from his meetings with the Bulgarian Secret Service agents. Okay, before we get into the next part of the broadcast, which, among other things, will examine the Grey Wolves, the supposed organization with this fractured leftist sections of it that Mehmet Ali Aja was involved in, according to Paul Henze, and which in reality is not the kind of organization that seems to fragment into leftist segments, we are going to take a short break to give you a chance to perhaps chew on a little bit of this this long and very complicated but very important first article. So we will return with more of Radio Free America and our fifth and final part of the Mediterranean merry-go-round. Christopher Lee, once exposed to the light of day, many of them seem to shrivel up because a lot of their power is based on the ignorance of people around, and that's true with quite a few different things. And ignorance is best combated by information, and that's what we're endeavoring to present at least some of tonight. We don't claim to be able to deliver the entire story on anything, but we certainly feel that we can help, and we are doing our best. So stick with us. We've still got a lot of interesting stuff to look at tonight. And we saw in the first part of the broadcast, we read a long article from Europeo magazine detailing the connections between the Bulgarian thesis and various Western and specifically CIA and Italian intelligence networks who got together 3 months before the assassination attempt on the Pope, and within a couple of days afterward had put out the beginning of the Bulgarian thesis that was first promulgated by the former CIA station chief in Ankara, Turkey, Paul Henze. And at the same time, we talked about the fact that contrary to what is usually going on, or what is usually attributed as motives behind the quote-unquote KGB or Bulgarian attempt to assassinate the Pope, that contrary to these attributed motives, that in fact that the Vatican seemed to be reaching a rapprochement with Eastern Europe, and specifically with the Kremlin, as regards the matter of Poland and nuclear disarmament and détente in general, which perhaps, as we get further on the broadcast, we will see perhaps is the reason that the Bulgarian thesis sprang into being in the first place, and perhaps ultimately was even the cause of the assassination attempt.
Recall that in the past, one of the major P2 devices for raising the devil in Italian society was the so-called strategy of tension that we looked at in connection with Stefano Della Chiai. Recall that that particular series of provocations was funded by, among others, the CIA. The strategy of tension basically was a program to discredit the Italian left by staging a series of bombings which would then be blamed on the left and serve as the pretext for a military fascist coup. One of the things we also looked at was the kidnapping and assassination of Aldo Moro at the hands of the Red Brigades, just as he was at the point of including the Communist Party in the Italian government. Of course, that proposed move on the part of Moro's was met with great disfavor on the part of the West. We've looked at interesting connections to the Red Brigades, including the Italian Parliamentary Commission's assertion that the Red Brigades were founded in part by Licio Gelli of P2. Those are a couple of things to keep in mind as we look at the background of this series of events. We're going to take a look now at the Grey Wolves themselves, and specifically where the Grey Wolves fit in the National Action Party, of which they are the youth wing, where they fit in the so-called Pan-Turkist movement. Now, we looked at the Pan-Turkist movement in Radio Free America show number 14, our program about the world, the first of two programs about the World Anti-Communist League. So, listeners who would like to review some of the information we're going to be touching on right now, go back to Radio Free America number 14, the first of a two-part Radio Free America series about the World Anti-Communist League. Now, in reviewing Aja and the Grey Wolves, and specifically their position within the Pan-Turkist movement, we're going to refer to Covert Action Information Bulletin, specifically to Covert Action's issue number 23 from the spring of 1985. That entire issue is called Disconnecting the Bulgarian Connection. One of the articles in there is called Part 2, The First Conspiracy, Aja and the Grey Wolves. The article reads as follows. While it is possible that the Pope's would-be assassin was manipulated by some outside party, in our view, Aja's motivation must be sought in his Turkish roots. The picture of Mehmet Ali Aja that emerged in the first week after his assassination attempt was one of a young man deeply involved in Turkey's neo-fascist right. Coincidentally, his assassination attempt occurred at the same time that Turkey's new military government handed down a 945-page indictment against the National Action Party, the NAP, the neo-fascist organization within whose political milieu Aja functioned. Thus, the Western media had ready access to vast amounts of information about the extensive political network that had sheltered and perhaps guided Aja in his attempt. Aja, moreover, had been arrested, tried, and convicted for the 1979 assassination of one of Turkey's most prominent newspaper editors, Abdi Ipeki, and information disclosed at this trial was also available to the Western media. This information was originally tapped by the media, albeit gingerly, but was then dropped entirely when the Bulgarian connection began to assume prominence. Born in the eastern, more underdeveloped part of Turkey, Aja came of age during the time that the growing ranks of the NAP and its youth affiliate, the Grey Wolves, were destabilizing Turkish society and politics. They were particularly active in high schools and universities. A member of the NAP served as Minister of Education in a coalition government in the mid-1970s, while Grey Wolves terrorists beat and murdered opponents to gain hegemony in the schools. Aja's high school was one of those taken over by Grey Wolves militants, and his teachers, courses, and high school chums shared the right-wing views of the NAP. The importance of Aja's immersion in the world of Turkey's ultra-right cannot be underestimated, yet it is quickly passed over by the terrorist experts, unquote, of the Western media who, claiming to see no reason why a Turk would want to kill the Pope, cast their gaze to the east. An elementary acquaintance with the history and ideology of the NAP, however, quickly reveals a worldview that adequately supports, if it does not rationally explain, an attempt on the Pope's life. Aja's younger brother Adnan, for example, told a reporter for Newsweek that Aja wanted to kill the Pope, quote, because of his conviction that the Christians have imperialist designs against the Muslim world and are doing injustices to the Islamic countries, unquote. The Nationalist Action Party was formed in the mid-1960s, when Colonel Alparslan Turkesh, T-U-R-K-E-S, and some other former army officers took over a largely moribund party of the traditional right and infused it with pan-Turkish ideology and cadres. Turkesh, and the NAP were heirs to the three-quarters of a century of pan-Turkish aspirations in politics. At first, the pan-Turks had hoped to reunite all Turkish peoples in a single nation stretching from western China to parts of Spain. At the end of World War I, with the Russian Revolution, the collapse of the Ottoman Empire, and the emergence of the modern Turkish state, Pan-Turks focused their agitation on the plight of the outer Turks, unquote, those people of Turkish descent who had been left outside Turkey's national boundaries and who constituted a majority of all Turkic peoples. It was of great significance to the future development of Pan-Turkism that a majority of outer Turks were now captive Turks, unquote, within the Soviet Empire. Not surprisingly, the German invasion of the Soviet Union in 1941 was greeted eagerly by Pan-Turkish organizations, as it provided an opportunity to dissolve the Soviet Empire and to unite with the Turkish motherland the Turkish peoples held captive, unquote. More than 100,000 Soviet Turks were recruited out of POW camps by the Nazis and enrolled in army units that fought alongside the Germans. With the defeat of Germany, and thus Pan-Turkish hopes, most Turkish people were still outside of Turkey proper. Pan-Turkish organizations were henceforth characterized by a strongly anti-communist and especially anti-Soviet ideology. This was the inheritance that Türkeş and his colleagues brought to the NAP in the mid-1960s. The party's structure served in turn as a vehicle to disseminate a pan-Turkish worldview, and it soon emerged as a force to be reckoned with in modern Turkish politics. In his writings and speeches, Türkeş combined a vision of a science-based and state-planned economy which was to bring Turkey into the atomic age with the legends of the Grey Wolf, who had led the Turkic peoples out of Asia to their homeland. As with European fascism, Türkeş's pan-Turkism sought to appeal to the little man, crushed between capitalist monopolies and a strong labor movement. It was also addressed to patriots, unquote, who believed their nation was being humiliated by its weakness in relation to the Soviet Union and the capitalist powers of the West. Aja became involved with the NAP's youth affiliate, the Grey Wolves, at the height of its terrorist phase. At that time, the Grey Wolves were training thousands of young recruits in camps throughout Turkey. The NAP developed a powerful base in Turkey, and in 1975, it elected four members to parliament and served as a junior partner in the National Front government organized by the right-wing Justice Party. By the time of the military coup in September of 1980, there were 1,700 Grey Wolves organizations in Turkey, with 200,000 registered members and about 1 million sympathizers. In its indictment of the NAP in May of 1981, the Turkish military government charged 220 members of the party and its affiliates with responsibility for 694 murders. So, taking just a minute there to sum up what we looked at in that particular passage, and also to review briefly the history of the Pan-Turkist movement, one of the things that we looked at in, well, actually in Radio Free America number 14, about the World Anti-Communist League, we took a look at how the so-called Outer Turks, that is, those Turkic, those peoples of Turkic extraction who were outside of the borders of modern Turkey, basically grafted onto a number of different causes in order to achieve their aim, that is, the liberation, quote-unquote, of the outside Turks and their inclusion in a vast Turkish state. One of the groups that the Turks turned to was the so-called Promethean League. That was sort of like a pre-World Anti-Communist League and World Anti-Communist League, and it basically was a group sponsored by Poland, which sought, among other things, the breakup of the Soviet Empire into its the Soviet Union, rather, into its member states. And, of course, the proposed Turkish Empire would have absorbed those peoples of Turkic origin. Now, with the advent of the Third Reich, as indicated in the article we just read, and that we, as we looked at in greater detail in Radio Free America number 14, the Turks then sought the Nazis as their vehicle to grab a hold of, I guess you could say, the Turkic sections of the Soviet Union. A great many Turks did fight on the side of the Soviet Union, the Soviet defectors, that is, people who had fought in the Red Army and then went over to the Nazis, people of Turkic extraction. We're going to look at that in just a minute. It's worth noting, too, that there was a lot of pressure on the part of the Pan-Turkists to have Turkey come into the war on the side of the Axis. This way, the Pan-Turkists felt that they could help a German victory and thereby liberate those Turkic-speaking people still inside the Soviet Union. Now, because the Turkish government felt that the Soviets had a good chance of winning, they did not choose to enter the war on the side of, they waited till almost the end of the war, then eventually entered on the side of the Allies. Because of the dismay that the Pan-Turkists felt at the neutrality of Turkey, there was a series of demonstrations in 1944 to try and bring Turkey into the war on the side of the Axis. Those Pan-Turkist activists who were so demonstrating were arrested. One of the people arrested in that series of demonstrations was the aforementioned Alparslan Türkeş, who at that time, of course, was just a young man. Eventually, Türkeş goes on to become a key Turkish military officer, and he founds, as indicated in the article I just showed you, the Grey Wolves. That is to say, the Well, he founds the National Action Party, the youth wing of which is the Grey Wolves. That's the fascist political party to which Mehmet Ali Agha belongs.
Okay, and we're going to read a short segment here about Alparslan Türkeş in a little more detail from modern, from Radical Politics in Modern Turkey by Jacob M. Landau.
By the way, this is published by E.J. Brill of London, copyright 1974.
Okay. A colorful and controversial figure, Alparslan Türkeş was born in 1917 in Cyprus, in Nicosia, which the Turks call Lefkoşa, and lived there until he was 15 years old, when his family moved to Istanbul. He was a voracious reader of history, literature, including journals of all kinds, and philosophy, a fact he always took care to emphasize. He graduated from the military academy in 1938 and chose the army as his career. In 1944, he was involved in an anti-communist demonstration, arrested and tried, apparently for his pan-Turanian propaganda, of which more below. Although acquitted, the affair haunted him. To his opponents, it proved his extremism, and to his admirers, his devotion to nationalism. Later, he wrote a book on the episode, stressing his patriotic behavior. He spent some time in Germany, served in the office of the Turkish military attaché in the United States. He reads and speaks English fluently. Then in the NATO command in Ankara. In 1957, he appears to have been one of a group of colonels and other ranking officers who planned a military movement to prepare a coup d'etat, which was not, however, carried out. Actually, later on, he was involved not only in a 1960 coup in Turkey, but he is also his followers were actively involved in the coup of, I believe, 1971 as well in Turkey, which led to the jailing of hundreds and hundreds of people who were opposed to anti-democratic movements, such as the one that had just taken over. Most interesting for our purposes is his involvement in NATO, among other things, the NATO command in Ankara, which, of course, in the 1940s and 50s, the NATO command in Ankara was almost certainly an element of the Gulen organization. We've talked at great length about the Gulen organization. Suffice it to say, for those of you unfamiliar with it at this point, that the Gulen organization was Hitler's Eastern Front Intelligence Unit that was directly grafted on to the just-born CIA at the end of World War II, where it became the CIA's Eastern Front Intelligence Organization with its Nazi membership intact. It then became NATO, NATO's Eastern Front Intelligence Unit, and eventually became, and this is also important for our purposes, the BND, the West German Secret Service, the Bundesnachrichtendienst. Now, interestingly also, of course, was his time as Turkish military attaché in the United States, and his fluent reading and speaking of English. This, in combination with his involvement with the NATO command in Ankara, is also rather interesting in light of, among other things, Paul Henze's time as CIA station chief in Ankara.
Okay, now we're also going to take a look at the possibility. In fact, we're going to take a look at some connections between Grey Wolf elements and the Central Intelligence Agency. Now recall, the Pan-Turks became allied with the Nazis because they saw the Nazis as their ticket to a renewed Turkish empire. Now, Alparslan Türkeş, one of those Turkish officers who was possessed of those pro-Nazi sentiments and is arrested for those sentiments in 1944. Türkeş, like a great many, pan-Turkists, retained those pro-Nazi sentiments. Recall that in Radio Free America 14, we took a look at the pan-Turkists and their participation in the Hitler war effort and also their inclusion in the aforementioned Gulen organization, specifically under a man named Theodor Oberlander, a key Wackel official and Gulen agent that we looked at in the past. Recall also that Alparslan Türkeş serves in the office of the Turkish military attaché in the United States and reads and speaks English fluently. Now we're going to get back into a piece of information that we touched on during Radio Free America number 14, and specifically we're going to look at one of these Turk-ik nationals who grew up in the Soviet Union and initially enlisted in the Red Army, then was taken prisoner by the Nazis and went to work for the Nazis for the duration, and then remained affiliated with those same pro-Nazi Turkish elements following the conclusion of World War II. We're also going to take a look now at some strong possibilities of CIA connections to the Grey Wolves. Returning now to Covert Action Information Bulletin, once again this is from number 23 from the spring of 1985. This is, again, from the issue we called Disconnecting the Bulgarian Connection. This is an article called The CIA and the Grey Wolves. Keep in mind Türkeş's work in the Turkish military, in the office of the Turkish military attaché in the U.S., also his connections to NATO. The captive Turks, unquote, provided a target of opportunity for U.S. intelligence in the post-World War II years, similar to the Belarusians, Ukrainians, and others who joined forces with the Nazis against the Soviet Union and later enlisted in the shadowy East European networks of the CIA. That is, there is no reason to suppose that the U.S. motivations and practices toward pro-Nazi East Europeans that have recently been exposed by John Loftus in the Ballara Secret were not also operative in the U.S. approach to the tattered remnants of those units of Soviet Turks which had fought alongside the Germans against the Soviet Union. A tantalizing link has been discovered by Turkish journalist Uğur Mumcu, M-U-M-C-U, who has exposed the CIA ties of Ruzi Nazar, a Turkoman who was born near Tashkent in the Soviet Union and deserted the Red Army to join the Nazis during World War II. After the war, Nazar was recruited by the CIA, and according to Mumcu, he, quote, was successful in penetrating Turkish fascist circles in the days when Ajal worked as a hired gun, unquote, for the NAP. In the 1950s, Nazar was a part-time contributor to the Voice of America, and it was perhaps through this work that he met Paul Henze, who was then working for Radio Free Europe. Nazar apparently joined Henze when the latter was sent by the CIA to the U.S. Embassy in Turkey in 1959. By the time that Henze had become chief of station in 1974, Nazar's cover had been blown, and his usefulness in Turkey had come to an end. Nazar was then transferred to the U.S. Embassy in Bonn, where, according to Mumcu, his assignment was to penetrate Grey Wolves organizations for the CIA while maintaining his close ties to Colonel Cherkesh. Whether the CIA had extensive ties with the Grey Wolves is an open question. The most likely avenue linking the CIA to the Turkish right runs through Turkey's counter-guerrilla organization, a branch of the Turkish General Staff's Department of Special Warfare created sometime in the 1960s. According to former Turkish military prosecutor and Supreme Court Justice Emin Deger, D-E-G-E-R, there was a close, working collaboration between the NAP Armed Commandos, or Bozkurt, and the counter-guerrilla units. There was also a close tie between the counter-guerrilla and the CIA. In his book, CIA, Counter-Guerrilla and Turkey, Deger further charged that the CIA, acting through the Turkish intelligence agency MIT and the counter-guerrilla, promoted right-wing terrorist actions to destabilize the Turkish government and prepare the way for the military government in the military coup of 1971. Another study of Turkey's counter-guerrilla notes that it was headquartered in the same Ankara building that housed the U.S. military mission, and that the training of officers assigned to this unit begins in the U.S. and then continues inside Turkey under the direction of CIA officers and military advisors, unquote. During the 1960s, according to the same study, the CIA assisted the MIT in drawing up plans for the mass arrest of opposition figures, and the study claims that this plan was put into operation following the 1971 coup. So a couple of pieces of information there worth noting. Now, Ruzi Nazar, originally a Soviet national of Turkic extraction, he goes to work for the Nazis and then goes to work for the CIA after the war. While working for Radio Free Europe, Nazar comes in contact with Paul Henze, who later becomes, of course, CIA station chief in Turkey and is also the first one to advance the so-called Bulgarian thesis. Now, we've also looked at the CIA ties to the counter-guerrilla units in Turkey, and in turn, those counter-guerrilla units relied very, very heavily on the cadres of the Grey Wolves.
Oh, last but not least, it should be mentioned that when we're talking about these various connections, that as we detailed in the last broadcast, that the entire Stibom Guns for Drugs train, of which Bekir Çelenk was the high-ranking Stibom member as well as the paymaster for the attempted assassination of the Pope, and of which several members of Stibom were also American intelligence agents or intelligence informants, that the folks who started this whole thing were the Grey Wolves. The Turkish Grey Wolves were the folks who first brought the drugs out of Lebanon and got it into the European part of the connection.
Okay, now, again, Alparslan Türkeş serves in the office of the Turkish military attaché in the U.S., then also serves in Turkey's NATO command. Quite possible that he was one of these officers who began training in the U.S. and then moved to Turkey to complete that very same training. Again, the Turkish Intelligence Service, MIT, works very closely with the CIA, and again, the Turkish counter-guerrilla units trained by CIA and financed in part by CIA rely very heavily, or in the past have relied very heavily, on the Grey Wolf cadres, the various paramilitary units of the National Action Party, founded by Türkeş, of which, of course, Mehmet Ali Ajah is a member.
Now, as we mentioned before, apparently the CIA's man in the Grey Wolves is a man by the name of Ruzi Nazar, and we're going to talk a little bit more about Mr. Nazar. We're going to read a section, I believe was translated by a listener, from a book called Shots in St. Peter's Square, Background of the Papal Attempt and Profiles of, quote, Bulgarian Connection Supporters. This book was written by Hubert Reichel, R-E-I-C-H-E-L, published in soft cover by VMB Books of Frankfurt in 1983. The chapter reading from is Chapter 4. Starts off with a quote that says, quote, the service history of Ruzi Nazar is classified, unquote, and that is attributed to a Bonn embassy guard, as said to a Soviet journalist.
By the way, this particular source is not from a Soviet journalist, but at the beginning of each of the chapters in this book, what they have, not that that would necessarily mean it was wrong, but just for research purposes, at the top of each chapter they have a little quote, and this chapter about Nazar, it's sort of tongue-in-cheek. The idea is that when a Soviet journalist asked a U.S. embassy guard, it said that he was told that the service history of Ruzi Nazar is classified, quote-unquote, and perhaps part of some of the reason why will become clear in the text of this book.
That's right. Reading from Hubert Reichel's book. Who is Ruzi Nazar? Umar Sarov, alias Nazarov, alias Nazar, began his career as a traitor. When Hitler's armies invaded the Soviet Union, Umar Sarov deserted the Red Army and offered his services to the Gestapo. By the fall of 1942, Umar Sarov, now calling himself Nazarov, had become deputy commander of a prisoner of war camp in the Ukrainian province of Volynskaya Oblast, near the Polish border. Later, he served in one of the SS-trained units of the Turkestan Legion, which excelled in brutal, quote, punishment operations against the civilian populations of the fascist-occupied territories. In 1944, Turkestaners attached to SS units were called in to crush the Warsaw Uprising. Nazarov had, quote, proved himself. He was promoted to Oberleutnant. In 1944, Nazarov was detached to Berlin. His new assignment was to select dissidents from among Soviet prisoners of war and induce them, with promises and even threats, to join commando units active in the rear of the Red Army. Although the record of his activities during this period is obscure, there is sufficient evidence to conclude that he was part of Operation Zeppelin, run by the Reichssicherheitshauptamt, the Reich SS Security Department, or RSHA. Its object was to recruit disaffected Soviet prisoners of war, train them as spies and saboteurs, then drop them by parachute in the Soviet hinterlands. After the fall of the Third Reich, the former Nazi joined the CIA. By 1950, Nazarov, now calling himself Nazar, had attained the rank of officer. He worked in Munich as a recruiter for the Secret Service and was employed in his spare time at the Voice of America. Here he met Paul Henze, who worked in Munich as a, quote, political advisor, in parentheses they have case officer, for Radio Free Europe, which at that time was still called Radio for the Liberation of Russia from Communism. So here's Ruzi Nazar, who starts off as, again, one of the Turkic nationals, or the Outer Turks, that are in Soviet territory. He deserts the Red Army, joins the Gestapo, is involved with atrocities in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, becomes a POW camp commander, eventually winds up in Berlin, where he selects Soviet prisoners to be retrained as Gestapo agents and dropped into the Soviet hinterlands. Again, basically the same thing that the Galen organization was doing at full pace and continued doing for about 5 years after the war ended on the CIA's behalf.
Zeppelin began under the auspices of Galen, and as Nip indicated, and as we talked about in Radio Free America's number one and two, basically the operation then just jumped from Nazi stewardship to CIA Galen stewardship.
And by 1950... Nazarov had joined the CIA and was an officer for the CIA, and we find him eventually working in Munich and then winding up working for the Voice of America, where he comes into contact with Paul Henze. So, again, Paul Henze, the man who began the Bulgarian thesis, former CIA station chief in Ankara, Ruzi Nazar, the CIA's man in the Grey Wolves, himself a former Nazi, not only a Nazi but an Oberleutnant in the SS, the entire Grey Wolf Secret Service, a Nazi-related neo-fascist organization specifically anti-Soviet in nature, Mehmet Ali Agha, the would-be assassin of the Pope, a man himself who has already shot a liberal editor of a Turkish newspaper because that man was railing at the collusion between the Grey Wolf drug smugglers and the Turkish underground, the Turkish underworld, and also certain Turkish political figures. So all the way down the line, we have anti-Soviet, pro-fascist people involved in the attempt. But again, one word from Paul Henze, former station chief in Turkey, obviously somebody who had worked around and with the Grey Wolves, and all of a sudden it is the Bulgarian thesis.
Now, of Ruzi Nazar, the aforementioned former SS man's former CIA agent's penetration of the Grey Wolves on behalf of CIA at around the time that Mehmet Ali Ajab was becoming active as a Grey Wolf hitman, reviewing now an article also researched for us by Ted Rubenstein. Ted got this article from the Arizona Republic, and specifically from the Arizona Republic of January 30th, 1983. It's a story headlined, CIA Allegedly Has Data on Pope Attacker. It's by Robert D. Kaplan of the Cox News Service, Dateline Ankara. This country's, speaking of Turkey now, this country's most respected authority on terrorism said in an interview that the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency had its own agent, an ethnic Turk born in the Soviet Union, working intimately with the right-wing Turkish militants close to gunman Mehmet Ali Ajah, who was convicted in the 1981 shooting of Pope John Paul II. Ugur Mumcu, an author, journalist, and former law professor, said Ruzi Nazar, a Turk who defected from the Soviet Army in World War II and was recruited by the CIA after the war, was successful in penetrating Turkish fascist circles in the days when Ajah worked as a hired gun for the National Movement Party, a leading right-wing organization. Interrupting, that's the same name as the National Action Party, two different names for the same organization. Mumcu said that Nazar, a man now about 60, was born near Tashkent in Soviet Turkestan and is believed to be living in Bonn, West Germany, with his West German wife. According to Mumcu, Nazar is retired from active service with the CIA. Although the CIA and the U.S. government are saying nothing for many obvious reasons, the CIA absolutely has to know things about Ajah of its own accord, which nobody else knows, Mumcu said. Concerning Nazar's ties with Turkish right-wing circles, Mumcu said, in a letter to MHP, National Movement Party leader Alparslan Türkeş, a letter that I have seen, a friend of Nazar, Enver Altalay, wrote about Nazar's influence in right-wing Turkish student groups in West Germany. Mumcu said Nazar's CIA links have been verified by a Turkish general who maintained close contact with Nazar. Nazar was in close contact with the MHP leader at the same time that Ajah and Musa Serdar Celebi were, Mumcu added. Celebi recently was extradited from West Germany to Italy for alleged complicity in the assassination attempt against the Pope. So this very same Ruzi Nazar, according to the top Turkish expert on terrorism and on the Turkish underworld, was penetrating the very same Grey Wolf NAP circles that Ajah and Alparslan Türkeş moved in, and was close to Türkeş at the same time that Ajah was going to work as a Grey Wolf hitman. So that's, again, worth keeping in mind.
Okay, now we are going to continue and to draw the strings a little tighter between Mehmet Ali Ajah, the P2, the Italian Secret Services, and the attempt on the life of John Paul II. What we're going to be reading from is a book called, an article in the Village Voice entitled The Ajah Con, C-O-N. This is originally written by Martin Lee and Kevin Coogan, and it was published in the Village Voice of December 24th, 1985.
By the way, you may want to look a week to either side, because the Voice often has one date on its inside pages and another one on the cover. So look a week to either side from the 24th of December, 85.
After his Bulgarian sojourn in mid-1980, Lee and Coogan write, Ajah shared a house with Katli, again that's Abdullah Katli, and a group of Grey Wolves in Vienna. As reported in the New York Times, the pistol Ajah used to shoot the Pope was purchased from a Viennese gun dealer by Oral Jalik. We're going to talk about the Viennese gun dealer a little later on. Katli, Jalik's close friend, has admitted giving the gun to Ajah. Okay, let me read that last part again. As reported in the New York Times, the pistol Ajah used to shoot the Pope was purchased from a Viennese gun dealer by Oral Jalik. Katli, Jalik's close friend, has admitted giving the gun to Ajah.
By the way, Abdullah Katli is a member of the Grey Wolves. He's going to figure prominently in the section Nip is going to read you here.
That's right. Italian magistrates now believe that Ajah had other accomplices in St. Peter's Square when he wounded John Paul II on May 13, 1981. Ajah told the court that Jalik was there, but he melted into the crowd immediately after the attack. I should just mention real quickly again to make the differentiation now. Bekir Çelenk, C-E-L-E-N-K, is the one of the highest ranking men in Stibom and the paymaster for this operation. I'm sorry.
Also, according to Ugur Mumcu, in a Guardian article we looked at last time, a member of Grey Wolves.
Right. Now, the Grey Wolf that we're talking about here, who purchased the gun from this Viennese gun dealer we're going to talk about later on, is Oral Çelik, C-E-L-I-K. So Çelik is the man who purchases the gun. Çelenk is the high-ranking Stibom man who's also a Grey Wolf and who is the paymaster for the whole thing. Okay. Aja told the court that Çelik was there, but he melted into the crowd immediately after the attack. Katli's activities from this point on are shrouded in mystery. He was briefly detained by Swiss police in February 1982, but the authorities released him 48 hours before an arrest warrant arrived from Turkey, where he had been convicted in absentia for the murder of the seven Turkish trade unionists. Judge Jörg Schild, chief of narcotics prosecutions in Basel, told Time magazine that Katli and Çelik were running a heroin smuggling operation during this period. Kotli's machinations evidently took him far afield. On September 9, 1982, he flew into Miami from South America on the same plane with Stefano Della Chiaia. And, of course, for those of you not familiar, Stefano Della Chiaia is probably among the most important, if a word like that is appropriate, fascist terrorists in the world. Has worked long and directly with Licio Gelli, also has worked with Klaus Barbie, former Gestapo and CIA man, and a variety of other folks, and was directly responsible for, among other things, the Piazza de Fontana bombing and the Bologna railway station bombing, both part of the strategy of tension designed by the Italian right wing, the P2, to shift blame and tension and excitement and public sentiment against the left in Italy.
Also, again, in addition to being a key player in all of the P2-related scams that we looked at in our third program, it's worth noting also that Stefano Della Chiaia was actively protected by American intelligence. We're going to look at that a little later in this broadcast as well, but an Italian intelligence chief charged specifically that the Americans were protecting Stefano Della Chiaia. It's also worth noting that Della Chiaia worked as a hitman and assassin in Latin America, too. He had extensive dealings in Latin America. We looked at all of that in our third program.
Okay, so we have Abdullah Katli, who's involved in a heroin smuggling operation with Oral Çelik. Katli himself a Grey Wolf, Çelik a Grey Wolf, and Çelik the man who purchased the gun for Mehmet Ali Aja to shoot the Pope with. And Abdullah Katli, now we have him on a plane in 1982 going into Miami from South America with Stefano Della Chiaia. Coogan and Lee continue. That was not the first encounter between the Grey Wolves and the Italian fascists. Prior to the papal shooting, the Grey Wolves' parent organization, the NAP, had been in contact with the Italian Armed Revolutionary Nuclei, the NAR, and Terza Posizione, which were both successors of Della Chiaia's Ordine Nuovo. Another factor connecting the Italian and Turkish right-wingers was the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, the ABN, a Munich-based umbrella organization. In 1978, the ABN magazine endorsed a campaign to free the, quote, political prisoners of Ordine Nuovo, who were serving time for a series of bloody bomb attacks in Italy. Ruzi Nazar, a friend of NAP chief Colonel Terkesh, continues to play a leading role in the ABN. This September, Nazar represented the ABN at the World Anti-Communist League convention in Dallas. We might just want to remind you that we just read a few moments ago that it was in Munich that Ruzi Nazar, the former SS Turk, first met Paul Henze, CIA station chief in Ankara later on, and the man who first published the Bulgarian theory.
And it's worth noting that after that point, Ruzi Nazar is then penetrating the very same Turkish fascist circles on behalf of CIA and is close to Turkesh at the time that Mehmet Ali Aja is coming into his own as a Grey Wolf hitman.
Continuing. Katli's thugs and Della Chiaia shared a similar ideological perspective. Grey Wolf literature spoke openly of a vast Jewish Masonic communist conspiracy, and their papers carried ads for Turkish translations of Nazi literature. Like Della Chiaia, the Turkish fanatics were avowed enemies of the Catholic Church. Both groups demonstrated a willingness to network, and the Grey Wolves posed an obvious question. Both groups demonstrated a willingness to work together, and right up here. And I remember the article before. Basically, it says, and shared a network, and the Oh, and the Italian intelligence, or the Italian fascist and gray and Turkish network, and the Grey Wolves pose an obvious question. Were the Turks working with Della Chiai when they tried to kill the Pope? So let me give you that last part again, since it's rather confusing. We have the Xerox cut off at the bottom. Like Della Chiai, the Turkish fanatics were avowed enemies of the Catholic Church. Both groups demonstrated a willingness to translate their beliefs into action. And translate their beliefs into action.
I guess we chopped off the sentence at the top there.
Okay. Anyway, it's going on to speak about that the fact that that these Italian fascists were in a network, and that the Italian fascist network and the Grey Wolves, the combination of those two, poses an obvious question. Were the Turks working with Della Chiai when they tried to kill the Pope? Okay? The plot, so that's basically what that sentence is saying. The plot to assassinate John Paul II is similar in one important respect to the Piazza Fontana bombing in Milan, instigated by Della Chiai, and to the Bologna train station bombing. All three attacks were unleashed by rightist terrorists who contrived to blame the left for what they had done. In July 1982, shortly after a civilian government replaced the cocaine colonels in Bolivia, Della Chiai narrowly escaped capture by a team of Italian and American agents. According to the Nazi legacy, Della Chiai later claimed he was tipped off by sources in American intelligence. Does this mean that he is being protected by a faction within the U.S. government? Vincenzo Parisi, a top official of SISDE, Italian Domestic Intelligence, and we should just mention here, SISDE is the organization that was cut out when SISMI gained more power. That's domestic intelligence. SISMI is military intelligence. Vincenzo Parisi, a top official of SISDE, Italian Domestic Intelligence, suggested as much when he testified in 1984 before the Secret Service Oversight Committee to the Italian Parliament. According to the Italian news weekly L'Espresso, Parisi, reporting on the investigation of the 1980 Bologna railway station bombing, told the committee that Della Chiai traveled undisturbed all over Latin America. When asked whether the fascist boss was possibly under the protection of a superpower, Parisi stated that U.S. intelligence offered only half-hearted assistance to their Italian counterparts, who were attempting to collar Della Chiai. Quote, Della Chiai enters and leaves the U.S. as he likes, unquote, Pazienza told The Voice. That's what the customs officials said. Indeed, it appears that Italy's most wanted terrorist may have been using Miami as a base of operations. Quote, when I put out feelers for an interview with Della Chiai in 1984, French TV reporter Pierre Abramovici told The Voice, our intermediary suggested an island near Miami as a meeting place.
So basically what we see here is a curious pattern of apparent cooperation between Italian fascists, notably Stefano Della Chiai, one of the main players in our Mediterranean merry-go-round scenario, and the U.S. intelligence-connected Grey Wolves, the youth wing of the National Action Party. We've noted here that Abdullah Kotli and an Aja associate who was one of the people associated with Aja in Germany, among other places, was traveling on the same plane going into Miami as Stefano Della Chiai. It's also worth noting that the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, a key element of the World Anti-Communist League, basically its representative at the recent WACL conference in Dallas, Texas, in September of 1985, was Ruzi Nazar, the very same Ruzi Nazar who we've seen associated not only with the CIA and with Nazi Germany, but also infiltrating the Grey Wolves on behalf of CIA right about the time when Mehmet Ali Aja is becoming an active Grey Wolf assassin. So one of the things to remember here is that even though, according to Mumchu, Ruzi Nazar had actively retired from work on behalf of U.S. intelligence, that he then is still very active, even after that period, with the World Anti-Communist League. Of course, the intimate and ongoing connections between WACL and U.S. intelligence were a major focus of our program, our two-part Radio Free America series on the World Anti-Communist League. Now,